Hi, good day, ladies. It's nice to see you. It's nice for you to turn out on a Sunday so close to Pesach. I'll look at you and say hello now. I will look at you and say hello now, because once I take my eyeglasses off to read my notes, I won't see faces. I'm not close enough. That's how close you want it to be. You want me to take it out? Oh my goodness. Doesn't blare? Okay, you'll tell me. A few years ago, an Anglo-Jewish newspaper had a pie chart which indicated that 80% of all Jews, of all American Jews who identified still as Jewish, who hadn't ceased that identity, attended a Pesach Seder. It's an enormous number. We're not just talking about Reform, Orthodox conservative Reform. We're talking about people totally divorced of any synagogue affiliation, any temple affiliation, but still call themselves Jews if they attended a Pesach Seder. When I was a little girl, about 50 years ago, East New York, East Flatbush, Flatbush, there was a phenomenon that I'm sure many of you would recognize. They were the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Jews. They were not observant Jews for the most part, but you would see them certainly on Yom Kippur. They had been in shul for a few hours in the morning. They were certainly there for Yisur. You could see them the whole day long in their sneakers, in their rubber shoes, waiting out the fast. Those Jews no longer exist in any large number, but the Pesach Jews do. Pesach has retained its hold on nostalgia, loyalty. It has themes which resonate with the greater American world and the greater American culture, something that can't be said of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. The themes are family, freedom. Pesach is both Thanksgiving and the 4th of July rolled into one. But the Pesach Seder is far from a Thanksgiving dinner. It's an elaborate ritual with a prescribed structure and a guiding text. There have been many attempts at rewriting the text to bring them into conformity with the calls for freedom of each generation. And anytime you walk into any kind of sarm store or bookstore or go online, you will find there have been contemporary updates of the text to fit the political causes or the social causes near and dear to different people's hearts. I remember once years ago when the feminist movement was at its inception, I remember once a feminist text, and the authors of that text had claimed that since women played no role in the regular Pesach Haggadah, they felt a need to rewrite a text where women were given their due. It was a good point, except for the fact that men play no role in the Pesach Haggadah either. Moshe Rabbeinu, I think, comes in for one parenthetical mention, one place in the Haggadah. The Pesach Haggadah is God's and nobody but God's. The word Seder is only used twice that I can think of in any kind of... We have a Seder, the night of Pesach. We also have Seder HaAvodah. In both cases, Seder is more than just a bunch of ritual actions. It's ritual actions in a very, very specified pattern or order, and the order cannot be changed. So we find ourselves on the night of the Seder fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa 3,320 years since the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. 3,320 years. And we're doing the same thing. We're sitting, fathers and sons and mothers and daughters and families, and we're retelling the story. The text came down from the oral law, codified in the Mishnah, and the final form of the absolute structure, not just the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the actions, the deeds, and the words to accompany it, we can find in Mishnayos Pesachim, Perek Yud. That's the Perek that is, I think, on your papers. That's the first page that you have. I printed out for you Perek Yud of Mishnayos Pesachim. And when I read this sometimes with my students, we read through the Perek as we will now very quickly. I say to my students, when we finish, you should be gasping. You should be saying, oh. So they do to accommodate me without a clue as to why they're gasping and saying, oh. So I'll give you a clue. You should be gasping and saying, oh, as we quickly review what's in this Perek. Because the mitzvah is 3,320 years old. It's the mitzvah since the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the formula of what to do and when to do it and what to say and when to say it, that is in its rough form written down here, finalized, and that was 1,800 years ago, give or take a few years. So the Pesach Haggadah as we have it, the Seder and the Haggadah as we have it, as we say it, were one of the Tanoim to grace your Pesach Seder. He might not speak English, he might not speak Yiddish, he might not speak Russian, he might not speak Spanish, French, Ladino, or Arabic, but he didn't know what he's doing in that Pesach Seder. And were you to be transported back to his Pesach Seder, you might be a little rusty in Aramaic, you'd understand his Hebrew, but you would also know exactly what's happening and the order in which it's happening. Because that is how consistent and constant has this been through years. Let's take a look at the Mishnayos so that you can say, oh, together with me. I'll read quickly and translate roughly and skip where I have to. Bottom, okay, the right-hand side, Perek Yud. Arvei Pesachim Samuch LaMincha Lo Yochal Adam Ad Yetechshach. On Erev Pesach, close to Mincha, no one is to eat until it gets dark. Yechil Anishav Yisrael Lo Yochal Ad Sheyasev. The poorest man in Israel doesn't eat until he is in a position of reclining, which means he's at his Pesach Seder. And he should not have fewer than 4 cups of wine, even if the money for them has to come from charity, even if the wine comes from charity. Mishnah Beis describes the order of the brachos in Kiddush. You pour the first cup. Beis Shammai says the following is the order of Kiddush. Beis Hillel says no, the following is the order of Kiddush. Mishnah Gimel, the Seder plate. We bring before him the following foods. And there's a listing of the foods that are on the Seder plate. Matzah, chazeres, karoses, 2 cooked foods, okay? Uba Mikdash, the last line says, Hayimadi imlefanav gufo shel Pesach, the time of the Beis HaMikdash, which is, and this will be important to us, which is 130 years, 140, 150 years before Chatimat HaMishnah. Don't forget, Chatimat HaMishnah is roughly the year 200 CE. Churban Bayis Rishon is, I'm sorry, Churban Bayis Sheni is 70 CE. So at least 130 years earlier, when there was a Beis HaMikdash, that too was on the Seder plate, the body of the Purban Pesach. Dalit, Mazgulo Kos Sheni. We pour the second cup of wine. The Chan Haben Shoel Aviv. The son asks his father. The Imenda Asbabein Aviv Melamdo. If the son doesn't have the intelligence, the wisdom, the knowledge to ask, then his father teaches him how to ask. Following after that are the 4 questions. And they tell you here too, in the Beis HaMikdash, the question was, why on this night do we eat only roasted meat? On other nights we eat roasted and boiled and prepared in all kinds of ways. 4 lines from the bottom. Ulefi da'ato shalbein aviv melamdo. According to the understanding of the son, his father teaches him. Maschil b'gnus u'misayein b'shevach. Here is an important component of the retelling. Okay? You have to teach your son and you have to retell him, but here's the pattern you have to follow. You have to open with the shame, the humiliation, the low status, and you have to close with praise, with glory. The doresh may arami oved avi achivmor kol haparsha kula. Here's the nub, here's the crux, here's the kernel. Where, in fact, do you tell the story from? What is your text source for telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Surprise, surprise. It's not Chumash Shmos. It's not Parsha Shmos. It's not Parsha Vaera. It is a Parsha in Chumash Devarim. Parsha, the opening verses of Parsha Kisavo, which we will look at in a minute. Let's continue. Robert, and if some of these lines are very familiar to you, that's because the Baal HaHaggadah, someone whose identity we don't know, but the guess is that he lived at Mishnaitic times, the Baal HaHaggadah took chunks of the Mishnah and inserted it into the text of the Haggadah. Rabban Gamliel Haya Omer, Kol Shalo Omar Shlo Shad Barim Elu, Ba Pesach Lo Yasoy Becho Vaso, Vi Elu Hein Pesach Matza Umarar. Not only must we have these representational foods in front of us, we must name them, we must hold them up, we must name them. And since the Torah gives us verses to explain what these foods represent, we must fulfill our obligation with these foods on that night. We must recite those psukim. We have to say what these foods represent. And we're not going to read this because you will be saying this at the Haggadah. So I just review for you a number of directives so far, which are so part of our Pesach Seder that I don't even realize that, I don't know that we realize that these are embedded in how to do a Seder properly by Chachmei HaMishnah, in the form of question and answer, father answering each child according to his level of understanding, opening with the shame and close and moving up to a peak of the grandeur and of, you know, a peak of grandeur and praise. The text, may arami oved avi, and the word doresh here is a very important word. Not kore. This is not to be read. Whatever is going on at the night of the Seder, it is not a reading of a historical account. It is a study and an analysis. Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, in shir after shir of his, keeps on making the point that the mitzvah of the Higalta Levincha is as much fulfilled by the process of Talmud Torah on this night as it is by the retelling of the story. And as I'm quoting, citing a Rambam, which I didn't look up and I can't cite, in which the learning of the mitzvos of that night are every bit as much a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Higalta Levincha as is retelling the story. All this from one word, vidoresh. Okay, vidoresh. Achiv mor kol haparsha kula, and we're going to look at that more carefully. Okay, we now learned also that you haven't completed what the requirements of the night until you've actually pointed to, held up, and explained the reasons for Pesach Matzah Umarar. Now we continue about 4 or 5 lines down. Bechol dor vador chayav adam lirbos es atzmo ki ilhu yatzom mitzrayim. Another requirement of the retelling of the night, to create an environment or an atmosphere in which each person senses his own personal redemption. This happened to me. She'ne'emah, the pasuk in Shmos that commands us about the retelling of the story on this night is, Higalta levincha bayom ha'uleymor ba'avrezeh osto Hashem li b'tzei sidi Mitzrayim. Therefore, we are required to praise, to sanctify, to glorify, lahodos, lahalel, lishabeach, lefa'er, and the last words in this Mishnah, the nomar lefanav ha'lelukah. And that's how our Pesach Seder ends. Go down to Zion, you pour a third cup, and you bench, you bless your bread, that means you say birchas hamazon, fourth cup, you finish halel, and you say various shirim. And ches, last few words, ein maftirin achar ha-pesach ha-pichoma. So what I wanted, I remember the first time I read this 15 years ago or so, 20 years ago, I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, that's our Pesach Seder. There it is. I know that when my husband and I are in Eretz Yisrael, we go to the southern excavation, my husband's standing on the steps, and there are tears in his eyes. The Tannoyim stood on these steps. I'm standing on the steps where the Tannoyim stood. I feel the same way over here. What a sense of continuity. What a richness. What a connection. We are doing that which the Tannoyim did. I want to talk about the kernel, the nub, where we actually tell the story, where we are mekayem the mitzvah. As I said before, you would agree with me that if this were a night of memory in the sense of retelling events, then we would have large chunks of Chumash Shmos, Shmos Vo'era Bo. We would expound on that by having many of the Midrashim. But the mitzvah of the night is not exactly a night of memory. It's memory in the service of building a national and personal identity. It is not remembering this fact or this detail or that. The Medrash is replete with details that absolutely entrance our children of what the Makos were and how the Jews suffered and how the Jews suffered under the yoke of the Egyptians, how the Makos punished the Egyptians, but that those details are not what it's about. It's about constructing a national memory and an individual memory that resonates with each individual. I read something which, for those of you, you know, if you like to read, I read an article years ago that moved me very much. I just reread it recently. It was in the volume 9 of the Torah Umada Journal, and it was an article by Erica Brown, Current Trends in Memorialization of the Holocaust. She writes a very, very, very sharp piece in which she discusses the last 20 or 30 or 40 years as an attempt to memorialize the Holocaust, and the attempt and the need to turn first-person experience and memory into a kind of communal, into something bigger. She compares the things that have been done to memorialize the Holocaust. She compares it with what was done by Tannaim hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, to commemorate the Churban Beis HaMikdash. And it's a very, very interesting piece. And it's an interesting piece because it points up to something which you and I, and especially your children and grandchildren, are going to grapple with. I tell my students that they are an absolutely pivotal generation, and there have been not that many of them in the history of Klal Yisrael. We share this with the second generation after Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we share this with the second generation after massacres of the Crusades, and we share this with the second or third generation after the Gezeirot Tachkat, and we share this, and it is now ours as well, in the aftermath of Churban Europe, of the Holocaust. How do you take searing memories of individuals and turn them into something beyond history, that is not just history, but that becomes the knowledge and the consciousness of future generations? We have a superb teacher who teaches Holocaust studies in our school, and I remember when I brought her in about 15, 18 years ago, there was a lot of, why do the kids need it? It's a little bit gory. They know all this. They know it from their parents, their grandparents. And I kept on saying, for how long? For how long? 20 years ago, when Holocaust deniers first hit the college campuses, they were an oddity and a weirdness and something very ugly. You would agree with me now that it has spread far beyond a few crazies on a few college campuses. So the question of how do you take a calamitous, ripping event in the Jewish, in the lives of the Jewish people, and how do you somehow embed that so it becomes part of identity is not an easy thing to do. And certainly, Yetzias Mitzrayim was that kind of an event, which not only was history, but defined major essential belief patterns for us. When I once said this in a high school class, one of my sweet and innocent young students said to me, when I talked about what do you do in two generations, and three generations, and four generations, where it's not my grandfather told me, but it is no first person, nobody who was actually there. And one of my kids said, Mrs. Press, I know you don't go to the movies, but if you were going to go to see Schindler's List by Steven Spielberg, then you would know what it was like. I said, honey, he also did Jurassic Park. And she just sort of looked at me. She didn't quite get it. You know, if we're going to rely on that for our memory, oiva avoy to us. So let's understand what this night is about. It's not about pure memory. In fact, the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah that is observed every single day in Kriyat Shema. In the list of Sheish Zechiros, the first one is L'man Tizkor Siyom Tzeischa Me'eretz Mitzrayim Kol Yimei Chayecha. That is one of the things we have to remember every day. And it is fulfilled, certainly, as a mitzvah Aseh Shazman Groma by men, in Ani Hashem Elokeichem Asher Hotzei Siyeschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim U'yos Lachem Elokim. It is part of the saying of Kriyat Shema. Before I go into a study of the psukim which serve as the nub or the kernel of this memorializing, I want to, if you have it, I would ask you to turn to the last page of this booklet, where I xerox for you a paragraph from an essay by Rav Yitzchak Putner Zichrono Livracha, the Pachad Yitzchak. He was Nifter in the 1980s, if I'm not mistaken. He was the dynamic leader of Torah Jewry in America. He was the founder of Kollel Arye is affiliated with Yeshivas Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. And he writes essays about the Yom Tovim. He says something very interesting. He says, take two of the characteristics of the retelling of the story which we are extracting from the Mishnah. The one is the need to tell it by way of question and answer. The other is the need to start with Gnus and to end with Shevach. He says, Ofen hasipur shel yitzias Mitzrayim ba behatama letochen hasipur. The form follows the content. Kishem shetochen hasipur mechayev l'saperes inyan ha-geula dafka b'tor shleimus shesamcha mitoch kisaron. We are forced to tell the story in a form that pinpoints the perfection that emerged, that sprouted from a lack. Kemokein ofen hasipur. The form in which we do this is the same kind of form. It's an answer to a question. There's something deeply satisfying to all of us about narratives that start with a lack and end up with a fulfillment of that lack. Whether it is the Abraham Lincoln biography, or a Cinderella story, or whatever rags-to-riches story happens to be your favorite, and I hope it's your own, okay? When I was young, I didn't have, and now life has brought me here. It's a very deeply satisfying story, and we always love it. We always love it. Whether it's Shidduchim, or riches, or the Baal Tshuva, or in any of its many forms, we love that I didn't have, and now I have. And what Rav Huttner points out is that content is mirrored by the form of the question that begs to be answered, that requires an answer or a solution, which is the simplest and perhaps most used pedagogical device. Create an intellectual thirst or a need, a hole, an emptiness, a dilemma, a problem, and then fill it with content. Rav Huttner goes on to say, more than the kasha needs a teretz, very often the teretz needs a kasha. For the teretz to resonate, it has to give us that aha sense of, that's satisfying. That solves a problem that has been troubling me for a while. So here we have the form we understand. Both the gnus to shevach and the question to answer, both required by the Mishnah, are fulfilling of need. Now let's take a look finally at the content itself. I xeroxed for you the first psukim, the opening psukim of Parshas Ki Savo. Context, Chumash Dvarim, Moshe Rabbeinu speaking, 37 days before his death. His farewell message to Bnei Yisrael, on the verge of their entering Eretz Yisrael, on the verge of his death. Okay. All of this is Moshe Rabbeinu talking to Bnei Yisrael. Who are these people? Are they Yotzei Mitzrayim? The youngest. The oldest, who were the youngest, I did guess Mitzrayim. Those who were under 20, okay? The Dor HaMidbar has died out. Most of the people standing before him were not themselves in Mitzrayim. And he's talking to them about something which is even further in the future. Again, I'll read and translate. V'haya ki savo el ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lecha nachala v'yirishta v'yashavta ba. When you come to the land that Hashem is giving you as an inheritance, and you will in fact inherit it, you will capture it, you will, after the years of conquest and division, and you will be dwelling in it, the lakachta me reishis kol priva adama asher tavi me artzicha asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach. V'samta batena. You will take from the first fruits, which you will bring from your land, which Hashem gave you. You will put it into a basket. V'halachta el hamakom asher yifchar Hashem Elokecha l'shaken shmo sham. You will go to the place where Hashem has chosen to dwell, to rest His name, of the Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash. Uvasa el ha-kohen asher yeh bayamim ha-hein. You will go to whoever kohen is presiding then. V'yamarta elav, and you will say to him, higadati hayom v'Hashem Elokecha, I am now affirming or announcing to Hashem, ki vasi el ha-aretz asher nishpa Hashem la-avoseinu la-seis lanu. I have come to the land that Hashem promised our forefathers to give us. I want you to just note that this double Ve'amar to'emar, you will say to the Kohen, Ki gadati hayom, I am saying today. There is a reason for that double saying, I think. Ve'lakach ha'kohen ha'tena miyadecha. He will take the basket out of your hands. Ve'hi nichol lefnei mizbach Hashem lokecha. He will put it in front on the mizbeach, before the mizbeach. Ve'aniso ve'amar to, and again, a double language of you will respond and you will say before Hashem lokecha. Arami oved avi, vayered mitzrayma, vayagarsham b'misei ma'at, vayhisham l'goy gadol atzum v'rov. In the Haggadah, we always translate Arami oved avi, Lavan the Arami wanted to destroy or wipe out my father. In this context, you will see that that's not pshat, although Rashi does explain it that way. The simpler and the smoother grammatical explanation is Arami Oved Avi. My father Abraham was a wandering Aramaic, or my father Yaakov was a wandering Aramaic. Vayered Mitzrayma, he went down to Mitzrayim. Vayagar Sham B'Misei Me'at, Vayihisham L'Goy Gadol Otzum V'Rav. You may now start hearing familiar sentences, or familiar, okay? And there's a reason. This is the Haggadah, starting in this pasuk. Vayareyu Osanu HaMitzrim, Vayanunu, Vayetnu Aleinu Avodah Hashah. Second sentence. Second pasuk, many sentences. The Mitzrayim did evil unto us, or made us evil in their eyes. They made us suffer. They placed upon us a burden of very hard work. Third pasuk. Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, we call down to Hashem, Vayishma Hashem es Koleinu, Vayar es Yenu es Amaleinu Yeslach Atzeinu. We cried out from our suffering and Hashem heard our cries. And the fourth sentence, the fourth pasuk. Vayotzeinu Hashem in Mitzrayim, Vyat Chazakah Uzro in Tuyav, Vumura Gadol, Vosos Tumosa. Hashem took us out with all of his might and with great signs and with great miracles. Here's the sentence that doesn't appear in the Haggadah, although it's clearly part of the same Indian, and it's almost like an artificial, like an unexpected break over here. We will come back and ask about that. Vayivienu el hamakom hazeh, and Hashem brought us to this place. Vayitein lanu es haaretz hazos, eretz zavat chalav udvash. And now, in some now these four sentences, starting with Arami Oved Avi, are called vidui bikurim, the testimony which accompanies the bringing of bikurim. Four verses, which recount the entire Mitzrayim experience. From the coming down to Mitzrayim with a few people, until the glorious exodus from Mitzrayim with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's miracles. And now the completion. I'm now bringing you the fruits. I'm placing it, I am bowing. Now, rejoice with your family, rejoice with those who dwell within your, you know, within your establishment. Okay. The Mishnah says, Doresh. Okay. Rav Yoshe Ber says it's as much a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim as the actual telling of the story, Doresh. Pay careful attention and extract meaning. So here's the question. Why did the Baal HaHaggadah, why did the Mishnah look to these psukim for a retelling of the story when we all would have expected that the retelling of the story should have come from Chumash Shmos, from the book of Exodus? Why is it coming from here? Well, there's a simple answer. There are a few simple answers. One simple answer. Cliff notes, Manak notes, Spark notes, whatever they're called in the 21st century, four psukim, you have the entire story. If you think it's hard to get your matzah, you have to come in by chatzos. Now, imagine what it would have been like had you been sitting and looking at the parashios of Shmos Va'era at your Pesach Seder. The entire story in four psukim. So that's an answer. And for children who have their Pesach Haggadahs, for those of you who have still held on to either your own or your children's Pesach notebooks, it's wonderful. It fits the theme of four cups and four questions and four sons, and okay? So you now have something else to add to that theme, which is four verses. Oh, and the four Lashonos of Geula. Now you have four verses, and those four verses tell the entire story. There's another simple answer. The theme matches a simple Pesach theme. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Paro, let B'ni B'chori Yisrael, let my firstborn go. This is a celebration of firstbornhood. Okay, the fruits that are first. Okay, it's simple, and I don't know whether it carries that much meaning, but it's another superficial theme. But then there are other themes, and they're perhaps a little bit beneath the surface, and they are important themes. Number one. That which has the most emotional impact on us is that which colors all our other memories. For you and me, even if you are shul goers and listening to this parasha once a year, these psukim don't say Parashas Kisavo to you. These psukim say Pesach Haggadah to you. For people living at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, for the men and the boys who brought the Bikurim up to the Mikdash, these psukim said Hava'as Bikurim. Because Hava'as Bikurim was a magnificent, magnificent parade and experience as the wagons from all over Israel converged on the main highway leading into Yerushalayim with the decorated oxen, okay, accompanied by musicians, baskets upon baskets of the first fruits. What a parade, what a celebration. So for anybody who was there, this would have been the peak emotional experience, and this would have, the words Arami Oveda Vi Bayerid Mitzrayma, these words would have been completely, completely colored by the emotion of the Havas Bikurim. So when you come down and you sit at your Pesach Seder, you're bringing the emotions associated with that event. That's an event totally, totally steeped in gratitude and Hakaras HaTov, as are these psukim. And so you bring something very important to the Pesach Seder. You bring, even into the telling, not just into the halal portions, but into the telling itself, you bring the fragrance of Hakaras HaTov. Chazal tell us, Vayokam Melech Chadosh Asher Lo Yada Es Yosef, Paro Melech Mitzrayim was not going to acknowledge the debt that the Egyptian kingdom priesthood owed Yosef HaTzadik for saving them from a famine and for establishing Paro's total authority. And it was only a few short psukim from that to Moshe Rabbeinu coming in the name of Hashem and Paro saying to him, Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Kolo, Lo Yadati Es Hashem. Lack of gratitude on one level leads to lack of gratitude on a much higher level. And the ability to know and experience gratitude, to let it fill your every pore, is central to the experience of being a mamin, of knowing what you owe Hashem. And so we take these verses that are steeped in that feeling, and we move them into the Pesach Seder. There's something else. I hope I'm using the phrase right, I don't know. But this is a narrative that's mediated through someone's eyes. Think about the narrative in Shmos, and think about the narrative here. The narrative in Shmos is, you'll pardon the expression, it's given you by an omniscient author, really an omniscient author, okay? Very different than the literary device, really an omniscient author. So you have a kind of, the narrator is not part of the story. Hashem is narrating the events in Chumash Shmos. You want to call it objective, but there's no human intermediary. Something very different is happening over here, isn't it? There's very clearly a person who is saying this. These psukim of retelling of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim are clearly being said by the owner, by the farmer, by the Jew who's coming to celebrate in Yerushalayim. Ve'anisa ve'amarta lifnei Hashem Elokecha, and this is what you should be saying. And look at what he's saying. The words are not different than the words in Shemot, but they resonate very differently. Vayareyu osonnu hamitzrim, vayanunu, vayitnu olenu avodah kasha. The Mitzrim did evil to us. They made us suffer. And we called to Hashem, and Hashem heard our voice, and Hashem saw our suffering, and Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. One of the directives in the Mishnah is Chayav kol adam l'ros es atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzom Mitzrayim. We are modeling that here, aren't we? So that we're using Pesukim that model precisely that experience. Not the experience of and Hashem took them out of Mitzrayim, but the experience of somebody who at least one generation later, and maybe 400 years of the first place of Midrash, 2, 3, 4 generations, 5, 7, 8 generations later, and yet he is suffused with his own gratitude and infusing the retelling of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim with that sense of thank you Hashem for taking me out of Mitzrayim. So we have not only gratitude, but we have a perspective or a point of view which is that which we are supposed to have at the Pesach Seder. There is something else, which may be a little bit more subtle, I'm not sure. The sayer of these psukim is not just modeling his own sense of having been there, but in the saying and in the way he chooses to say, he is also clearly indicating his status as a free man. So not only is he expressing gratitude, not only is he expressing gratitude in a way that makes him feel that he was part of that, he's also in his expression of gratitude, he is very much indicating that he's a free man. There are three halachic, I don't know if there are more, but there are certainly three halachic disabilities which the slave has. Not the Eved Israel, the Eved Yehudi, obviously the Eved Canaan. Here are the three halachic disabilities. One, a slave has no heritage. He cannot claim a father and he cannot claim his sons. He has no yichus. A slave has no yichus. He's cut off from the line of generations. Number two, which I suppose I should have made number one, a slave has no property. He owns nothing. He doesn't own personal property, he doesn't own communal property, he owns nothing. Number three, a slave cannot testify in a law court. His testimony is worthless. Take a look at what happens over here. Do we have a person who is tied into his generations? Yes, we do. The land you promised my fathers, to you and to your household. So I have here someone who's announcing proudly that he is part of a chain. He is tied into generations. Number two, is he a man of property? Clearly he is. Personal property. He's bringing baskets of fruit that he grew in his own orchards, in his own gardens, in his own vineyards. Number three, okay. Communal property. The Nachalah and Yerusha, which he got from his fathers, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. So I have now a person with family, a person with property, and I have a person who's giving testimony. I told you to notice before there are double languages of speaking or saying that are really redundant. Ve'amarta elav higadeti hayom. You will say to the Kohen, I say today. Ve'anisa, you will respond. Ve'amarta, and you will answer. What those lishonos are really declarations. He said, I now declare, I now affirm. So I now have a family man, a property owner, and a proud testifier to HaKadosh Baruch who's having fulfilled his promise. And in that sense, the speaker here is clearly an example of the freedom which we have. And finally, and maybe as important as the Hakaras HaTov thing. It is very easy in any area of history to get wrapped up in the events of that time and that moment. We all do it, and we are students of history, we're students of politics, the causes, the root causes, the early causes. Surely there's no Holocaust class or study that doesn't go back to the political situation in Germany as a result of World War I, the situation of the Jews and the relationship to the Christians of Europe. One goes back all the time. All the time one goes back to seek out causes. But that leaves us with a limited picture. Because ultimately, and that's one of the things that in certain senses has secularized the memorialization of the Holocaust, this notion of its uniqueness in the annals of Jewish history. Because what we're doing here and what we're doing in the Haggadah is that we are linking things that happened to a logic and a pattern that is divinely controlled, divinely ordained. Okay. When we come to thank Hashem for redeeming us from Mitzrayim, we're doing it on the backdrop of, as you promised, as you said, you fulfilled your promise. Brispein Habsarim, which is in the Haggadah, Geri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lohem Ve'Avadum V'Inu Osam Arba Me'os Shana. Okay? This is what you said, Baruch Shomer HaKachasa LiYisrael. You told us how it would be, you told us what would be, and in fact it is as you have told us. And for us, as believing Jews, that's crucial. That's crucial. That sense that there is a rhyme, a rhythm, a pattern to history. And in this Havas Purim, it's not just the story. It's the story embedded in, and you said, and you promised, and it happened. We can deal with anything if it has meaning and if it's not random. And so, there are a lot of reasons for why these verses are going to be the kernel, the germ of the kiyum of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Brevity is probably not a small thing, but in addition to brevity, there are basic religious hashkafic themes, principles of emuna that are carried forth by this particular recitation that might be missing were we simply to borrow the psukim from Chumash Shmos. There's one more thing which we ignored and which perhaps I would like to... All of this is very beautiful and very moving, but there's one pasuk there which brings tears to our eyes, and that's the last pasuk, the pasuk which doesn't find its way into the Haggadah. Pasuk Tes. Vayivienu el hamakom hazeh, vayitemanu es ha'aretz hazos, eretz zavas halav yudvash. How could that pasuk have found its way into the Haggadah when the Chachmei HaMishnah, who were putting this together, were still suffering the agony of the loss of the Mikdash and the Eretz Yisrael? What kind of a mockery would this have been of the celebration of the night if you would have evoked the tears of all the celebrants as they remembered a loss of 3, 4, 5 generations ago? So, in an essay that I read by Rav Moshe Eisman, a collection of essays on the Haggadah, he quotes Rav David Zvi Hafman, who offers a fascinating thought. He says that it is possible that you all know, or you've heard at some point, that there is a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Okay? There's the Mishnah says you have to start with Gnai and move your way to Shevach. You have to start with the low station of the Jews and move your way to the high station. How do we do that? So, one says, Rav says, we start with Mitchila Ovei Avoda Zara Hayu Avosenu. We were idolaters. And when we end with Yachshav Kervanu HaMachom Avoda So, and now we're not idolaters, we worship Hashem. Shmuel says, We start with Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. That's what our lowly status, and we end with Vayotzeinu Hashem Misham. So, which, you know, two versions as to what it might be. But David Zvi Hafman says something very, very, I don't know, it resonates. When I read it, I found it very moving. He said, in its conception, the Matchil B'Gnus Misayim B'Shevach is done in its totality from these Sukkim. And that's why my father was a wandering Aramaean makes sense. We were nobody, we were nothing, we were barely a tribe, and now we are here in fulfillment of your promise in the Beis HaMikdash. That's the whole story. That's the whole story. But then what happens when you have to cut off the last pasuk of that story, and you can't tell it that way anymore? Rav David Zvi Hafman says that's when Rav and Shmuel have to somehow reconfigure the Haggadah. This is a theory, but it's a fascinating theory. They have to somehow reframe the Haggadah so as to create a different beginning and a different end. And in a sense, one creates a huge, you know, theological beginning and end, and the other creates a limited historical beginning and end. One takes us into the realm of we were not God's people, and we are God's people. And the other gives us a more limited historical view. We were suffering in Egypt, and now we are free from Egypt. But this perfect little story of we were a wandering people without anything, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this land and fulfilled its promise and united with us in the Beis HaMikdash, that story has to wait. That pasuk has to wait, because at this point, it's missing. At this point, it's missing. Last Sunday, in an act of enormous nostalgia, I went to a Zamir chorale performance in Carnegie Hall. I did it because of the age I am, what Zamir chorale meant to me when I was younger, and I wanted to hear those songs sung again. You were there? I was so sad. It was so beautiful. It was so moving. And the audience was full of people my age and older and younger, but not many. I was so moved, and I was so sad. I almost felt, I wondered if in 20 years we would be able to have the same group, the same song sung with the same emotion. And so I read to you from Rav Moshe Eisman, and with that in memory, with the sense of the things, the power, what's going on in Eretz Yisrael today, I read to you Rav Moshe Eisman's summation over here. Never ever must we as Jews feel ourselves subservient to the cause and effect laws which govern nature, and more particularly history. We are to fear nothing but our own propensity to sin, to distance ourselves from God. We are to turn nowhere for succor but to God, who alone is author and executor of our salvation. So we are in suspension. The fifth pasuk awaits re-inclusion in the Haggadah. Okay? And with all of our pain and all of our anguish and all of our propensity to talk about politics and about politicians, this night of Pesach reminds us that everything that happens in history is embedded in a context of promise and fulfillment of that promise. I want to read one more little piece, because I think it's from Rav Eisman. This is, he writes in his introduction to the book. He says, "It is easy to sit back and check nachas from the explanations, interpretations, and shalom that our children bring home from school or innovate themselves." He says it's fun to discuss halachic complexities of the night's mitzvot with our yeshiva bachrim, to delight the depth and perceptiveness of our seminary girls, okay, hashtag insights, and the little ones, what the little ones are coming home with from kindergarten and nursery and first grade and second grade, it's more and more creative, it's more and more enticing, it's more and more entrancing, it's just like, oh, wow. But in all this, listen to this, in all this, we run the risk of losing control of the evening, of filling the precious minutes with something less, or at least something other than is really demanded. The delight of the moment may smother the contemplation of eternity. Past and future are readily washed away in the torrent of elation that inundates the present. We cannot evade the truth that the Seder night in ancient Egypt and the modern world is meant to set the pattern of Jewish history fundamentals of emunah, of faith. As I read in a very different context, faith is not what we think about. Emunah is not what we think about. It's what we think with. And this is the night for passing on to children and grandchildren that which we think with. Thank you.